The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. This is Hour 2 on Thursday, and it will be similar to Hour 1 in that we're talking college football. It will be different in that Hour 1 included Richard Cross, good friend of mine, sideline reporter, Ole Miss Radio, among SEC Network, ESPN, other duties like that. Always love catching up with Richard. Coming up in about 10, Braden Gall. Man who's all over it, based out of Nashville, owner of 440 Sports. You can hear him on Sirius XM College, Athlon Sports, the Cover 2 podcast, etc. So we'll be talking with Braden as well as Drew DeArmond, our good friend from 97.7 ESPN in Huntsville. That's the bottom of this hour. Obviously, Bama working towards their spring game just like everybody else. We'll cover that and other items with Drew. But right now, we'll get you up to date.
Everything you need to know about college football. Every single day, this is CFB 365, presented by Ecoderm. Text Ecoderm to 31996 now for your free sample of Ecoderm pain relief cream and CBD from Frank Thomas. Text ECODERM to 31996 now.
Headline, SEC quartet among players attending NFL draft, at least those who have responded that they plan to. The SEC quartet that announced, well, it includes Devonta Smith from Alabama. He is the Heisman winner. He says he is officially scheduled to appear in Cleveland at the NFL draft later this month. I'm going to move on to the Jamar Chase, etc. I'm going to get to him. I missed my Vegas draft. Wasn't that last year we were supposed to have the draft in Las Vegas? And if you haven't been to Vegas, I had never been to Las Vegas until March of 2003. I counted up. I think I've been 19 times since then. And just love it. And the fake Lake Como, was that it outside the Bellagio where the fountains are? They were going to have a floating stage, and they were going to ferry the kids on boats out to the commissioner. Was going to be so cool for them and to watch, and it's in Cleveland instead. Now, no jokes coming. Have you ever been to Cleveland? I've been to Cleveland. You know who needs a PR agent more than anybody? Cleveland. I had a blast. I was up at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame about 3-4 years ago. I hosted on Classic Vinyl on Sirius XM, which broadcasts from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So the wife and I headed up there. Cleveland's a great place. All kinds of these just gorgeous buildings, you know, old architecture, grand structures downtown that nobody is in. So they need a PR makeover, but that's a fine place. But that's not... It's also not the Bellagio in Las Vegas. So that's where Devonta Smith is going to be. Again, Jamar Chase, et cetera. Mac Jones is going to attend in person, et cetera. There is one more headline, and this is the only one I'm going to get. There are others, but I'm just going to give you this one because it bears a little more conversation. I told a story before. In fact, yeah, go ahead and consider yourself up to date because I'm going to go long here. So you can turn the music down. We're done. I told a story before that back in, like, ancient times when Abe Lincoln was president, you had to get your sports news from a newspaper, that my first stop every single morning walking into Central Gwinnett High School in Lawrenceville, Georgia, I'd go to the library because the library had those, you know, the long wooden spindles that they would put the newspapers on so that you couldn't steal it. Well, that's fine. I just steal the sports section out of the long wooden spindle thing. So I would take the sports set. I was like, this is an academic house. There's no need for sports pages here. That would be my rationale to steal the sports page. So I would go to the back page first because that was always where they would list transactions, standings, all the technical information. Then I would go back and read from the front. Well, I remember one day, and this would have had to been, oh gosh, I don't know, fall of 85, maybe spring of 86. I saw a transaction listed. The San Antonio Gunslingers of the USFL, quote, waived the entire 58-man roster. Couldn't make payroll. Figured they were going to go out of business. They waived everybody. Now, it was just a procedural thing, but they announced it just like so-and-so has been placed on the injured list. So-and-so has been released. We've announced a trade. They're like, we'd like to announce we have released some players. Which ones? All of them. Yeah, we ain't got no money. And we're not going to play anymore because we're not going to beat the NFL in court, etc. I never seen a headline, or excuse me, a transaction listed like that. I've never seen a story like this one. Hawaii has placed, Dan, how many scholarships do you get in Division I?
85.
Hawaii has placed 81 football players in quarantine due to multiple cases of COVID within the program. This comes 2 days after the school announced it was pausing all in-person football activities indefinitely. Now, multiple cases, the number, as I've seen it, there are 5 players who have positive tests due to contact tracing measures. There are only 4 players available, at least on scholarship. And even then, they're not even all on available because you would have to have early enrollment. This would have to be August for you to be dealing with 81 kids quarantined. Now, the last part of this, it remains unknown when the Rainbow Warriors will be able to resume spring practice. I'm going to guess they're going to require a special waiver from the NCAA because they had already started spring practice and then they announced on maybe Monday or Tuesday that they were pausing everything. By the rule book, you have 34 days to get this thing done. Hawaii's not going to be able to do that. Remember that it's not that they're missing 4 kids. They have 4 available. They have 4 available. And that's if you're counting the whole 85, which again, they've got departing seniors who are still there on scholarship who are not practicing. So it's just, it's as difficult a situation as I can remember seeing. Anything beyond football injuries, et cetera, what's going on with the Hawaii program right now. So hope for the kids that they wind up getting this thing, back on the rails. And I would put it this way. My goal, if that's Todd Graham out there now, I believe. My goal, if I'm Coach Graham, it ain't about having a spring game. It's about everybody coming back June 3rd or whenever summer session A starts. That's my target if I'm the head coach. We're going to break. Come back next.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Notre Dame will have a spring game this year. That's not unusual. There will not be any fans allowed. That's probably not unusual in the spring as well, and that's fine. It's a spring game. It's a practice that they call a game so that they can fool alumni into coming to campus for a day. But the coaches don't want to play a game. They'd rather just have a practice. The unusual part is that the Notre Dame spring game that won't have fans, it's going to be on Saturday, May 1st. I can't recall the last college football spring game that happened in May. I'm sure there's been thousands. But I bet you on campus at Notre Dame, at the exact time that spring game's being played, I bet you there are students all over campus taking final exams, like somewhere, like or handing in final projects or whatever. So they're waiting till the very end. And I got to tell you, Notre Dame, you lose a lot of starters. You lose a whiz of a DC. I don't know how you get better off of that. But Notre Dame and where Brian Kelly has them, maybe they don't necessarily have a drop. I want to welcome on now a guy who we normally talk SEC with, but I'm pushing the walls a little bit here. Owner of 440 Sports. Also, you can hear him on SiriusXM, contributor to Athlon Sports. I want to welcome on now. It is Braden Gall. Braden, how are you, man?
What's going on, man? How we doing?
I'm enjoying spring games. I'll have to wait until May to get the final report from Notre Dame, and that's a little unusual. I want to start with the Irish, though, because they're one of, like, the two or three final independents left in college football. They don't have to have a drop-off, do they? I just don't know how they don't. I guess I just have a lot of faith in Brian Kelly.
Yeah, I think there's two ways to look at this. One of the few programs that wins 10 games almost every year for the last 5 to 8 years. I think there's been two bad years in there, one really bad one and sort of one subpar one, but basically double-digit wins every year. You know, listen, Ian Book to Jack Cohn is a huge step back, all right? Just straight up at the quarterback position, Jack Cohn is not a difference maker. He is not going to change their offense. In fact, he's the liability on the offense. The transfer from Wisconsin. So if they've got a younger option on that roster that could push him for time, I think if you're a Notre Dame fan, you're rooting for that. I will say hiring away Luke Fickell's defensive coordinator from Cincinnati after losing a star coordinator like Clark Lee, that's about as big a hire as you could possibly make in college football. So I believe in that. And I think Brian Kelly, to your point, has done a better job developing talent than almost anybody in America. So they don't recruit with Ohio State and Alabama and Clemson and Georgia and A&M. They don't recruit in that pond. They recruit in the smaller pond than that, but their guys are right there in the playoffs. So there's a drop-off. I'm with you. I don't see this being a playoff team. I trust him to develop guys and to replace people and to develop especially the offensive and defensive lines. They've got maybe a slightly better roster on the outside on offense as far as weaponry goes this year, but there's a major step back quarterback. So the schedule's not, the schedule's not easy like it is ever for Notre Dame. So 10-2 feels about right. Still a really good team, top 15, but are they good enough to get to the playoff? I don't know. I don't see it.
Kind of sort of similar with Texas A&M and their personnel losses as well. I have a lot of faith in their DC. I have a lot of faith in their offensive staff, which I think kind of is Jimbo. What's ahead? Show me the crystal ball. Where's A&M in December?
So here is the difference between A&M and I just mentioned it, right? A&M does recruit from the big pond.
Yeah.
And they've got NFL studs along the defensive line. They've got two guys in the backfield that are absolute difference makers that nobody Notre Dame has in Aeneas Smith and the Spiller kid. Like they are absolutely dynamic. The offensive line is going to lose a lot, but they have a lot of pieces coming back, guys. Their tight ends are amongst the best in America. Like I would look at A&M and I would say that is one of the three teams that can win the SEC. If you're asking me who are the three teams that can win the SEC, I think A&M is in the group. So it's all about, like you said, trust the coaching staff. The talent has been there. They're stacking top 10 classes on top of each other, guys that are elite five-star talents that are going to end up playing on Sundays. And so I A&M, are they better than Bama? No. No one's picking them to beat Bama. But if you're telling me draw a circle around teams that are in the SEC that can win it this year based on what you see on paper, coaching staff, experience, talent, et cetera, schedule, whatever, who are the teams that can win it? It's Bama, Georgia, A&M, and I'm not sure you put another team in that group.
All right, you said schedule, talent, et cetera. And I'm looking at LSU, and I'm going, check the box. Check all. You know, whatever the et ceteras are, check the box. But you started with coaching staff. talk to me about whatever the bounce back in Baton Rouge is, because I never thought I'd see an LSU fan base ecstatic to finish with a 500 record. I understand when you're 3-5 and finish beating UF and Ole Miss. I mean, I get it, but there was way too much talent on that roster for my liking to finish 500.
So are you suggesting that hiring coaches, having never met them, is a strange strategy for a coach in the SEC?
Not the way I would go about it.
I mean, obviously there's also tons of distraction inside that athletic department right now, as there should be, and that should hang around Coach O's neck to some degree. The coaching staff turnover, he went really young this year, right? He tried some old guard guys last year, and we all could have told you from 100 miles away that Bo Pelini wasn't going to work. So he's sort of shifted back to a strategy that worked the year before. That's it. It affects Nick Saban, right? When he loses that amount of coaches, And he had stability this past year, which is why I think they were able to go undefeated during a pandemic, is because they actually had the most stability on the Alabama coaching staff that we'd seen in years, and I think it benefited them. But even Nick Saban has to overcome some of that stuff, let alone Coach O. And we know Coach O is great at certain things. There's other things that he's just not the best at. And so, I mean, LSU has the talent, to your point. The schedule's still not super easy, but it's manageable. It's no different, really, than A&M's, honestly. It's about quarterback situation. I think the line of scrimmage is going to be pretty good for LSU. We know they're going to have – I'm not worried about LSU finding receivers and running backs. They always have dudes. So, and linebackers in particular is another good one. They've got some star power in the secondary. So it's about the quarterback and the coaching staff. And those are giant question marks. When I look at A&M, I have complete and utter faith in Jimbo Fisher and his quarterback being on the same page. It's a complicated offense. And somebody's going to have to really step in and show that they're, you know, capable. But if you compare those two things, aspects of the team, like, you know, A&M gets, you know, 5 stars and LSU gets a giant question mark. Yep. So I still think LSU is a top 25 team. I still think they're third in the division. I would have Auburn probably fourth in the division, maybe even Ole Miss fourth in the division. So I still think LSU is in, like you said, is more of the team we saw at the end of the year than they were the team that got roasted by, you know, Mike Leach and Mississippi State in week one. I'm concerned about a whole lot of, you know, it's coaching staff, off the field, culture, distractions, all that stuff. I mean, generally in the SEC, when we know that that kind of thing is happening, it can unravel pretty quickly.
60 touchdowns from your quarterback covers up a lot, doesn't it?
Well, 60. Like Florida under Urban Meyer with Tim Tebow, right? Like Tim Tebow covered up everything. You know, look at what Butch Jones was doing. Like, look at the dysfunction behind the scenes in Tennessee, despite having won 9 games in back-to-back years. Yeah. Arkansas has had it with Bobby Petrino. Like, you can – there sometimes it looks all and I was actually at LSU for spring practice like in 2015, and I was there with Houston Nutt, and we were watching ball, and we were interviewing people and talking to Joe Oliva, talking to Les Miles, and Coach O was there as the D-line coach, and we were talking to, you know, all these people, and like we left that day after watching practice, and I think this was the year Cam Cameron might have been diagnosed with cancer, so that was sort of we attributed the weirdness to that, going, okay, that makes sense, that story wasn't out yet. That makes sense why Les Miles was acting like a complete weirdo to us the entire day, and why the entire athletic department was acting so strange. But it turns out there was a lot more going on.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It turns out there's a lot more going on. And so I think you can hide a lot of stuff, but it's tough to overcome on the field.
Absolutely it is. I remember the story of Cragthorpe showing up in Louisville and getting a look at the Petrino roster, and he was like, uh-oh, we got issues. Braden Gall, appreciate your time as always, brother. We will do it again soon. Thank you, man.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, again, Braden Gall from Sirius XM, 404 Sports there in Nashville as well. Always love having him on.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
The Golden Flake A-Day spring football game in Tuscaloosa will be played next Saturday. And it's going to be high noon local time kick. It's going to be on ESPN, not on SEC Network or Alternate or Third Channel or anything else. It's the giant one. And they're going to have folks in the stands. In fact, I believe the premium seat ticket holders, the existing ones, they can kind of like pay $10 and get into their suites or whatever, the club level. And then students get tickets. General public can have some tickets. And I think that actually starts happening on Saturday. If you're in Gen Pop, you can go to the game as well, but you got to wait till Saturday to get your ticket. Want to welcome on right now, man who does a great job covering Alabama football. His whole station does. 97.7 The Zone, ESPN up yonder in Huntsville. It is Drew DeArmond. Drew, how are you today?
Good, Chuck. How are you, sir?
Doing all right. I got to imagine that. Do you get a credential or do you buy a ticket? What do you do to get into the Bama spring game? Because you'll be there.
Well, I hope to, you know, get a credential. We really haven't heard yet what the media availability is going to be as far as the press box capacity.
That's been different everywhere. That's not a sure thing.
No, it's not. Matter of fact, you know, we didn't have credentials this whole past football season, our station. So we weren't able to go to a game and cover it in the box. So if we're let back in there, that'll be a nice change. It'll tell you things are starting to return to normal. But as you probably heard, Greg Byrne not going to announce the official capacity for Bryant-Denny Stadium until this weekend after, of course, the mask mandate comes to a close on the 9th. So by Friday, I think we'll know and have some clarity on how many tickets they're going to put on sale. But you're right, as far as the suite, the high-level ticket donors, they're going to be in the suites, $10 a piece. And then, as you said, the general public going to be $5 a piece. So we'll have an idea about the capacity, in a few days. But certainly that's going to be an interesting topic with the A-Day coming back. But we're just proud to have a spring, proud to have an A-Day, proud to be returning to normal in Alabama.
Yeah, absolutely. Second that. So a couple of practices remaining and then the final scrimmage, which is the game, a week from Saturday. Tell me what you think the offense is going to look like. And I'm not just talking about Bryce Young, but I'm saying the offense, if he's the trigger man, it's going to be different. And if you've got more proven experience at running back, I don't know. Just what is your inclination about how the offense is just going to look?
Well, I mean, if you go back and watch Houston Texans film last year and the year before with Deshaun Watson, you'll probably have some sort of idea of some of the wrinkles that might be added by Bill O'Brien. But, it's still Nick Saban's offense. He always makes a point to say when he hires coordinators, they come in and learn his system. As you know, they just hired Drew Swoboda from Memphis to be the special teams coordinator. He's not really getting out on the field hot and heavy right now with the players. It's the first time Coach Saban has hired an assistant in the middle of spring practice. But as he said yesterday, he's still learning, the system, learning the playbook. So, and then they're going to put him out in front of the players, when he's more comfortable as he continues to learn. He's going through the meetings. He's certainly interjecting. And as Coach Saban said during the interview process, he was the best teacher. So, but I think offensively, it's going to look similar to what we've seen the last couple of years under Tua Tagovailoa and under Mac Jones. Now, last year we didn't see as much of the RPO because Mac Jones is a little bit different style quarterback. I would think with Bryce Young's athleticism and mobility and his ability to move, you might see a few more RPOs. But I think offensively it's going to be much of the same. It's going to be a lot of three wide, one back, sometimes going to four wide, every now and then going to five. But I think it's going to be a lot of the same concepts that really you've seen the last couple of years.
A phrase that kind of emerged that I was like, oh, let's come up with something else. COVID freshman is somebody who played maybe all, 10 games or 11 last year, but they're still going to be a freshman. They're called a COVID freshman. I like the other end of that a lot better, super senior. That's somebody who's coming back for the extra magic year. And that's Brian Robinson, isn't it? I don't think most people realize, because I went back and looked, he has had a steady kind of stream of playing time throughout he's put together some decent career numbers, and now he has this one final season. What do you think is possible for Brian Robinson?
Well, I think he could be a 1,000-yard rusher in the offense, Chuck. I mean, I've always been really high on his ability. He's a guy that's 6'1.5", nearly 6'2", 225 pounds. He's been clocked at under 4.5 in the 40 at pro day kind of functions before. Nick Saban loved the kid. I mean, he made sure that he stayed throughout these years. Coming in with a guy like Najee Harris, Najee got a lot of the headlines. Najee was a five-star, number one running back in the country. I remember Brian Robinson going through the Alabama-Mississippi All-Star game and saying, look, I'm going there to compete. It doesn't bother me that Najee Harris is coming to Alabama. I think I'm talented in my own right. And as a true freshman, Nick Saban liked him enough to get him on the field some in situations, kind of like a Roy Upchurch. He played some fullback. He was a goal line runner. He scored some TDs on the goal line. So, and I thought it was significant. He asked Brian Robinson or encouraged him to return for a fifth year. He'd never redshirted. He got a chance now to be the guy. I thought, starting with Arkansas last year, he made a huge one-handed catch to continue a drive in Fayetteville. And I thought the last half of the season or the last third, he really started to play at a high level. I thought he was tremendous against Ohio State. He ran with a lot of physicality and toughness. He didn't get as many opportunities because Najee was such a great three-down back. But I think, he's won the confidence of Nick Saban. The only thing he's done during his career, much like Eddie Lacy, he's had some fumbling issues. But if he solves that problem, he's actually a really good receiver. If you go back and look, he played for Sam Adams at Hillcrest Tuscaloosa High School, who's now the head coach at Oxford High School, just took that job. But he was a guy, we had Sam Adams on our show on 97.7. He made a prerequisite for Brian not to be a guy that was a 30-carry guy at Hillcrest. He wanted him to be a good all-around football player. He lined up in the slot. He blocked a lot. He could run. So when he got to Alabama, he was a back that could block, catch, and run. And I think that's why he got on the field, even with Najee Harris and some of these other – Josh Jacobs, some of these other great backs, because he could do a lot of different things. Now he gets to be kind of the bell cow, and I think that Brian Robinson's slated for a big year if he can stay healthy. And he's got a great backup who has a lot of natural ability that's already flashed that in those scrimmages last week, and that's Jace McClellan, who we saw a little bit last year as a true freshman.
Was it Upchurch that caught that winning touchdown in the Iron Bowl in 09?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Come up with other examples from now on, all right? Glenn Coffey or somebody. Don't use the Roy up. You bring back bad memories. finishing with Drew DeArmond from 97.7 ESPN. You mentioned Jace McClellan. That literally is the next guy. What's his role? What is possible for him? Like, what do you see him doing on a typical Saturday?
Well, I mean, I would think it'd be a lot like, these two guys and the kind of backs they are. I could see a split like we saw in 2012 with Eddie Lacy and T.J. Yeldon. Both of them went over 1,000 yards. They got enough touches to do so. I think with the versatility of Brian and his ability as a receiver, I think Nick Saban, that was probably one of the selling points of bringing Brian back for a senior year. I would imagine they're going to try to showcase Brian as a receiver. So I think Jace, with his ability to his vision, the way he glides, and, of course, you saw the 80-yard touchdown run in that Arkansas game, his ability to break the big run, I think those two can be an outstanding combination. And then you've got a guy, he never opted out officially, Chuck, but he was really the only young man that did. You can count it as a redshirt year and whatnot. But Keelan Robinson from Maryland, he's another guy that I've heard has been getting some reps in the slot. I think he's going to be a big factor as a kickoff returner and a runner. I think when you're talking about that top three, Brian Robinson, Jace McClellan, and Keelan Robinson, I think they're all going to be heavily involved in the offense, especially when you take into account the losses at wide receiver where you don't have a lot of experience. And some of those guys, you never know until the bullets start flying live how much progress a guy needs to make. So Alabama, they've got the Slade Boldens of the world that played some last year. They've got Xavier Williams. They've got John Metchie, who's missing the spring. But I think Keelan Robinson's explosiveness will be used as a receiver. So I think they're going to have roles for three running backs to be prominent in the offense. And, of course, that'll be Brian Robinson, certainly Jace McClellan and Keelan Robinson.
All right. I didn't prep you for this. And, folks, Drew just knows Bama, so we just have him on off and flying. But I want to get your opinion about a sort of a philosophical thing that I was thinking about last night. All of these running backs, we just talked running backs 5 minutes, and you named all these different guys. You didn't mention Trey Sanders at all, and he might have been the number one back a couple of classes ago. And I don't know if you mentioned Roydell Williams, who was a 2,000-yard guy in state there. Here is what I was thinking about last night. Alabama, like everybody, has players transfer. But it's almost never the four-star or five-star freshman or redshirt freshman who's angry about playing time and depth chart, and he leaves. When players leave as newer, younger players in Tuscaloosa, it seems that maybe it's a personality thing, discipline thing, academics, whatever. Other programs, I'm a five-star. If I'm not starting, I'm leaving. If they leave in Tuscaloosa, it's usually like Tyrell Shavers as a junior or senior. That's just unusual to me.
Well, it is, and I think it's the culture that Nick Saban has been able to build it in Alabama, because I think he's convinced kids that if they wait their turn, they will get an opportunity and they will be ready for said opportunity. And there's no better cases than Najee Harris, who didn't become, even as a five-star number one back in America, Chuck, he didn't become a full-time starter until he was a junior, and then had two outstanding years. Matter of fact, if you had bet me, and of course I'm not an individual that wagers, but if you had bet me that Najee Harris would be a four-year player at Alabama and stay through his senior season, I would have thought you were crazy because he was the number one, you know, running back in America. But look at Mac Jones. He stayed, and, you know, he bided his time. And then people don't realize this. He still left a year early. He played 4 years at Alabama. He could have used a fifth year. He was a redshirt junior, but he's probably going to be the number three pick in the draft of the San Francisco 49ers. How crazy, if that happens, is that going to be when just, you know, 2 and 3 years ago, he was the third-string quarterback in a quarterback room with Tua Tagovailoa, Jalen Hurts, and Mac Jones, and he may go higher than the other two.
If there was spring practice last year, he may not have even been the starter.
Right, and so that's what's so crazy, because I wish I could have been able to read the future like they did in Back to the Future, where you had that book.
Gray's Sports Almanac.
Yeah, I could have put, $1,000 on Mac Jones being a top five pick. I'd be rich. But I'm just saying it's crazy how that works. But I think it's a credit to Nick Saban, you know, and the culture that he's been able to build. You know, you got guys that wait their turn, and then they end up being great players. Certainly, I do think there's going to be some attrition from that backfield you just talked about, because Roydell Williams, I love him. I think he's got a chance to be special. You know, I think he'll stick around for when Brian Robinson moves on. But still, and you've also got a guy like Kyle Edwards, who I really liked out of, Dutchtown, Louisiana. He redshirted last year. He's still there. And then we're not even talking about Kamar Wheaton, who's not even on campus yet.
Yeah.
So it's a backfield that's ridiculously deep. And so we'll see. But you're right. It's a pretty amazing that Alabama they don't have a lot of guys just like Eddie Smith left to go to Illinois to play for Bet Bielema, but he stuck around for 2+ years. But I think it's a lot of what you see with Nick Saban. And also, I don't underestimate Jeff Allen and Dr. Matt Ray and then David Ballou and what they do with strength and conditioning that these players really take advantage of and enjoy, because they get these guys better. They get these guys bigger and stronger and faster. And I think, you know, unlike the NBA, who can take kids after a one-and-done type deal, these kids understand, you know, I can't go to the NFL draft for 3 years. So if I have to wait my turn at Alabama, look at how many first-rounders Nick Saban has had. If he gives me my opportunity, I'm going to be ready, and then I'm going to seize it.
Fantastic stuff, Drew. Always appreciate you coming on, brother. Enjoy the spring game, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate it.
All right, Drew DeArmond again from ESPN Huntsville. Just really, really good guy. Certainly knows his program. I just asked him on the fly, was that Roy Upchurch caught that pass 12 years ago? He's like, absolutely it was. I was like, well, pick a different game then, because that broke my heart. Auburn was not very good in 09. They were emerging. They had a kid named Chris Todd playing quarterback, sore-shouldered kid, I think from Texas Tech. Early lead on Bama, and then Bama's like, very nice. And then it was Upchurch that caught that pass getting in the end zone. He was a good back. He came in, I think it was he and Glenn Coffey in the 05 class maybe. And obviously by the time they were leaving, the whole program had transformed. Just an amazing, amazing job there. And it was just the beginning for Nick Saban, no doubt about it. So always appreciate Drew coming on as he heads to the Golden Flake A-Day game. I got news for you. I walk into media days, Atlanta's the only other place it's been so far. They can't give you enough Golden Flake. They cannot give you, and I even eat the flavors I don't even like. What's the one that's like the salt and dill flavored?
Oh, that's my favorite.
Oh, it's
dill pickle. It's so good.
Too tart, but I'm like, price is right. What do they say? Media members, two favorite kinds of beer, free and free light.
Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
I wish we had, 18 months to get them ready, but we don't. So the rush is on, but so far, so good.
That's Ryan Day, Ohio State head coach. He's a head coach. I do have to explain to you who that is. Wish we had 18 months. I wouldn't have to say anything like that. All right. Wish we had 18 months and Nick Saban beating that Coke bottle to death. I wouldn't have to say it, but Ryan Day, I have to say it. Now, Here's what I wouldn't say, especially if I were him or any college coach. Wish we had 18 months. Brother, you almost did. All right, you almost did have 18 months to get a quarterback ready, and it's the last thing you wanted. So he is talking about replacing Justin Fields. He's going to have a second pro day. And I don't know, this turned into like Hunger Games with him and Mac Jones to be the third overall pick. They're going to like throw some footballs out there in the woods and like you got to go find them. And what I don't know what's going on with Mac Jones and his flight up the draft ladder. I also don't believe it. But Justin Fields is going to have a second pro day, and I'm going to try to reaffirm some of what NFL scouts and franchises and coaches and personnel folks already think of him. And hopefully, I mean, that thing with Orlovsky, with the comment he made, and then Herb Street coming back, they work for the same company, don't they?
Yeah, and apparently mom and dad talked to them.
Exactly. There's a. I've said this, and this goes back to my manager at Domino's when I was in high school. I'm 18 years old, and I'm showing up to work my evening shift because I had school during the day. And the Domino's man, this guy named Ron Stuckey, and he was on the phone when I showed up to, you know, change into my awesome Domino's uniform. And he's on the phone with me. He's like, all right, Roy, well, come on up here and we'll talk. And so he hangs up. I was like, Roy, I thought you were firing Roy. Everybody, Roy was sorry. I thought you were firing Roy. He's like, well, I'm going to do it in person. And I was like, why? If you're going to fire him, just do it on the phone. Because I was 18 and said stuff like that. And I remember Ron saying, there's a right way and a wrong way to do everything. And that is one of the things I've told you on the side of the fridge, life's rules. It's a right way and a wrong way to do everything. So anyway, Ryan Day, again, trying to find him a new quarterback and moving about it. But the Herb Street criticism of his coworker, there's a right way to do that. And apparently that's what the folks at the mothership in Bristol got that point across. I'm going to count that as my closing argument. Yep, that's what I'm going to do. And I had a Randy Shannon and Will Muschamp thing, and I had something about Clemson's defense, and I had all of this stuff. But you know what? We have another show tomorrow, and I promise you there's at least a chance it makes it onto tomorrow's show. So that's my closing argument brought to you by the law offices of Alexander Chenard and Associates. Wherever you're at, deep south, doesn't matter if it's Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, wherever. If you need legal expertise, you need Alexander Shannara and Associates. What up, Dan?
Oh, not much. And, you know, it's one of those things, we always got to find our strengths. And knowing our strength is the best part of either being a player or a coach. And I thought that this one, though, even though it plays to his strength, was an interesting inference by Rhett Lashley, the offensive coordinator at Miami, is that he wants a bell cow running back this year. And I think that those of us look at the situation and say, Cameron Harris, Don Chaney Jr., Jalen Knighton, I mean, you know, I was going to say, why do you have to have one over the other when you've got those three good players? And he also, too, Chuck, you know this as well as anybody watching him call offense at Auburn over these years, is that the best form of offense for them is when they do have a very potent running game where they can have one guy who is the leader, but then also, though, too, the next guy right next to him who can come in there and hurt you as well. And that is going to be the key to success this year for Miami, is if they are going to be able to get to the 9-10 win mark this year, it's going to be because of that offense being able to move the football and move the football fast on people, because you have Derek King, who found a really nice home last season, was able to put them in some great wins and also be able to carry them further than I think a lot of people thought they were going to be able to in the second year of Manny Diaz. For this, it is going to come down to the running game, and I guess when it all comes down to it, I trust Rhett Lashley when he says that, because if there's anybody that knows what the success of this offense looks like, it's that guy.
I was stunned by the success that he had last year coaching, but then again, he had De'Aaron King running that offense, and there's your key. If De'Aaron King is the quarterback, the running game works better because of the threat of Derek passing the ball. The passing game works better because he's got the football in his hands and not whoever the back, Van Dyke or whoever, would be playing. I don't know who the next quarterback would be. But the reason I said it's not Jalen Knighton is when you look at the probably the three running backs who could really kind of hammerlock whatever available carries there are, he's not a plow horse sort of back. He is a more – he can play all three downs, but he's more of a third down and a catch the ball and outrun you and things like that, whereas Cameron Harris and Don Chaney both go about 212, 215. They're bigger, thicker kids. So you got the different variety of running backs there, but it all comes down to De'Aaron King. I mean, we could talk offensive line and their improvement, and Charleston Rambo transferring in, and Will Mallory still there. Do all of that. De'Aaron King comes back. They could win 10 games and represent the Coastal Division if De'Aaron King is back and limited, which, see, the good news is the worst-case scenario is he's back but limited. Then you're talking about a team that is just in the mix in the Coastal, and that could still bring it home a few seasons ago with what North Carolina is now, some of the other programs that are improving, getting harder and harder to make hay in the Coastal Division. That's a good thing for everybody in the ACC. All right, Dan, Matt, appreciate everything behind the glass. Everybody listening, thank you. The guests, same thing. 22 hours. Recharge those batteries. Back for Friday on the Chuck Oliver Show. That is tomorrow.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you? 3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.